Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar.com, chase your destiny. By Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series. By Swim Run USA, epic races in epic places. And you can check out Swim Run at USA-SwimRun.com. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, last year we sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest is a young man who we met years ago when he first started with our Challenged Athletes Foundation. He's a 2014 Paralympic gold medalist in Sochi and Paris snowboard cross, 2012 world champion, 2011 Winter X Games gold medalist, 12-time World Cup medalist, Paris snowboard cross. He's doing it all. And Dank Slalom this year, getting ready to head over to South Korea. His name is Evan Strong. Evan, how you doing, bud?
Hey, what's up, Bob? It's good to be with you.
You know what? I think the first time we met was over on Oahu when we were doing our Ironman Revisited. Is that right?
Yeah, we were at the Ironman Revisited on Oahu while I was living on Maui. And it was freshly after my accident when my leg was amputated in 2004. So we probably met in like 2005. I was still on crutches.
You were on crutches.
I was on crutches, not even fitted for my first prosthetic.
Well, and it was interesting because we had Rudy there, I think, double above knee amputee, and that might have been one of the, you know, was that one of the first amputee guys you saw and got a sense of what someone could do?
It was definitely, I got to meet Rudy for the first time, there at that event, and just super impressed. It was pretty actually awakening. We're like, oh, wow. I can be an amputee and I can be a champion.
Right.
So he just like right off the bat, like being a new amputee, like really lost and like, what does my life look like? What is my identity? Like are my values something worth still pursuing? And like in one moment, Rudy was the person that like, yep, you have the permission to be a champion. And super inspiring. And I've been on that program pretty much ever since.
So growing up in Maui, you were skateboarding first, right? Or surfing and skateboarding. Surfing first, then you got into skateboarding, what, age 11. Then you're sponsored by a local shop when you're 13. And the goal was to become a professional skateboarder?
So my mom gave me my first skateboard when I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw it, I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And from there on out, I started building. I would just ride it in the driveway endlessly. I used to build ramps to ride off of and everything. So I've been going sideways for 20 some odd years now. And it's just been my passion ever since. And when I did my first skateboard contest at 12, I got second place, and I just felt so accomplished and just stoked, just fueled up for this thing that I've been doing since I was 4 or 5 years old, and that was skateboarding. I told my mom and my dad, like, I want to be a professional skateboarder. I want my life to be based around this. And when I was hit, it was definitely flipped on its head. But at that point when it happened, I was definitely well on my way in competition and doing demonstrations for sponsors.
Yeah.
And, so it's just been a dedication and a passion and a devotion of mine since I was a kid.
So at the age of 17, your sister's got a motorcycle for her 21st birthday, and you missed your ride to work, and so you borrowed the motorcycle. And you're, what, 1 mile from home? And a drunk driver hit you at 65 miles an hour heading the opposite direction?
Yeah, wow. It's been 13 years since that happened, and hearing somebody talk about that back at me, it just brings me back. Like, thing that's pretty hard to believe. Like, yeah, that happened to me. And yeah, it completely flipped my life upside down.
So while you're in the hospital, what were the doctors telling you? Because here you are, you're basically almost a professional skateboarder. Your plan is to be a professional skateboarder. Were the doctors saying, hey, you're going to have to give that up? Or were they giving you hope that, hey, there's no reason you can't be an athlete again?
Oh, man. So my dad told me, so I got medevaced by helicopter from the island of Maui over the ocean to the island of Oahu. It's our capital, and there's much more established.
Right,
and,
medical. Yeah.
Medical. So my family jumped on an airplane and came right over. And when I was getting carted from the ambulance from the helicopter into the hospital,
mm-hmm.
my dad saw the doctor and said, are they going to be able to save the leg? And the person said to my dad, like, we're lucky to get him here alive.
Wow.
So, yeah, from being a well-established skateboarder as making it my profession to, yeah, almost not making it to the hospital alive. So a lot, yeah, it was definitely a big change from where I was to what I had to deal with.
So five surgeries, and then you have the left leg amputated. How long did it take you to? We're talking 13 years ago. There's been a lot of advancements since then. Take us through the process of you had to go through therapy for how long before you could get fitted for a leg.
Oh wow! So yeah, it's been 13 years now. It's really a blessing to be able to be where I am back and be like, oh wow, that was the worst day of my life. But life does go on, and I'm not living in that pain, suffering, just that place of that it, life is normal again, you know. So first I want to just give gratitude for time. Yeah, so how much time? It took a lot of time.
Yeah, I bet.
So first of all, what really helped me in my recovery was my attitude. I'm like, okay, yeah, like, I almost died.
Right.
I didn't have enough. I bled out so much that they couldn't find a pulse on me because there was not enough blood to fill my arteries and veins.
Wow.
But I also knew, and I just had the attitude of like, yes, I'm a survivor. And I'm going to get through this. I know it's really tough, but I know where I've been, and I know where I'm at now, and I know where I want to be. And that just got me at least in the mindset to look for a physical therapist, the motivation to look at my diet, motivation to just look at my health and how I can recover as quickly as possible. But it took a solid 2 years before I ever felt even durable again to like walk off a curb.
Right.
It was a long, hard road, but I'm happy I put in the hard work because it's paying off now.
What was the lowest point for you?
Lowest point for me was after the month stay in the hospital, I was sent home and just for the time to heal from the surgeries, the wounds, the stitches, the sutures, the antibiotics, the medications. And that was a pretty long road, and I think it took well over a year. In that waiting game for an 18-year-old, that was my low point, you know? So I'm like, wow, I'm an 18-year-old. I have a lot of energy. I feel good because I have vitality on my side, but I'm, like, completely bedridden, and I'm in a ton of pain. So it's just like, that was like telling like a dog to like sit down and roll over at the same time. And you're also talking to a professional athlete that's whole life and passion was based around movement. That was the low time because I was just so torn.
And when were you able to, do you remember when you were able to skate again and when you were able to surf again?
Oh man, I was so antsy that I started skateboarding, I think at a, skateboard for the first time 4 weeks after my amputation, when I flew home from Oahu to Maui, they're like, where do you want to go first? And I'm all like, oh, I want to go to the skate park. I want to see my friends.
Sure.
I got there, and I got to say hi to my friends. And then I asked for one of them for a skateboard. And with my crutches, I used them as, like, outriggers or rudders. And I got on my friend's skateboard with my one leg and pushed myself across the skateboard. So technically it was only 4 weeks, but when I really started skateboarding again with a prosthetic and stuff like that was well over a year.
How much improved is the equipment today from when you first started skateboarding with a prosthetic 13 years ago or 12 years ago to where it is now in terms of the improvements in the equipment?
Improvements in the equipment is definitely better, and it's at the level of technology where it is making life comfortable and opening up a lot of options physically for amputees to be able to live a very active, comfortable lifestyle. But I still see so much potential of growth for making it even better. And so the possibilities of expression physically for amputees, I see in the near future to be way, way more, because there's so much room for improvement in this area.
So for a kid from Maui to see that you're a snowboarder and competing basically as a professional snowboarder, when did that come about, that transition? And how smooth was that transition from surfing to snowboarding?
A lot of similarities in skateboarding, surfing, and skateboarding. They're very common. Slight differences because you're on different substrates, like surfing is, of course, water, and then snowboarding is snow, and then, of course, skateboarding is on wheels, so that's a little different. Instead of, like, sliding or gliding on a subsurface, you're rolling. So small differences, but very similar. And living in Hawaii, I was definitely exposed to skateboarding and surfing. But once I, like, had a second chance at life after my amputation, I one day came across a snowboard magazine, and I was flipping through the pages and see these snow-covered mountains with people riding boards down them. I was instantly inspired, and I'm like, I have to do this. I'm here. I'm able. I have to do this. So I told my parents, I want to learn to snowboard, and I want to work at a ski resort. So I packed up and moved to Lake Tahoe, California.
Yep.
To learn to snowboard, got a job at North Star, bought all my equipment, was working grounds, taking out trash, earning my season pass, and waited for the snow to fall, and just went. Just head first into the lifestyle, and ups and downs, crashes, injuries, but also just a ton of fun because of my background in skateboarding and surfing. Like, being strapped in with a binding was perfect for my prosthetic because I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere, so I could use it to drive board. And it was just such a feeling of liberation and freedom from my accident, because it just was such a great platform for an amputee. And got introduced to racing and snowboard competition that first spring, and found snowboard cross, and it fit like a glove, and it was the greatest rush I ever had. I've been doing it ever since, and it's been 10, 11 seasons now.
So did the X Games, were they, because when I watch the Olympics now, the Winter Olympics, to me, look like the X Games. Like, so much of this, the big air and so much of the snowboarding was certainly not in the Olympics back in the day. And Olympics have become sort of an extension of the X Games. Did the Winter X, was that something that had adaptive sports in it? And was that sort of the kickoff?
So, yes. Absolutely, and it's really cool to see the progression of trends of sports and disciplines, and extreme sports being more recognized. Yep. And for a long time, people didn't even say that we were, like, what we were doing was a sport, you know?
Right.
So for it to be in the Olympics, and now it's kind of like the headliner for live TV, it's just, it's really cool because it validates what we've been into for so long. So it's cool. And also some other cool things is like having now surfing.
I was going to ask you about that.
Surfing Tokyo 2020 and skateboarding also in Tokyo, and to see the Paralympics following the trend and having it be a part of the, possibly the Paralympics in
2024. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just exciting things on the horizon.
So when you first started competing in your, you know, 2011 Winter X gold medalist, people might not, back then, when you win a gold in Winter X, that's a huge deal. When did, you know, sponsors start sitting up and taking notice of this young man competing in adaptive surfing events, snowboarding events?
So it really made its presence when we were accepted by the International Paralympic Committee as an official sport for the Paralympics. And that's where the support and everything really came online. And Racing X Games is like the premier event. It's the biggest, baddest course in the world. And it's like, I consider it our supercross course, and winning that back in 2011, getting bronze in 2012, getting to race it and get sixth in 2016. It's always the highlights of my career. So, just being able to have a gold for that, of course, it's one of my prized possessions of my career.
So 2014, you're in Sochi, and you take the gold in the Olympics. I mean, really with a sport that hadn't been in the Olympics very long. And I'm sure growing up as a surfer, skateboarder, you're not thinking the Olympics. You're thinking that, you know, I want to be a professional and travel around, but nobody's thinking these sports are going to be in the Olympics. Winning that gold, how important, how special was that for you?
Yeah, that was just one of the, so many emotions. Of course, all the things that you normally hear from an Olympian or Paralympian is just like, what an honor and a privilege to be able to represent your country and then represent yourself and your sport on the biggest stage in of any competition platform in the world. There's a spirit, the Olympic spirit there. And to be a part of that was something, forever grateful for. Nothing short than amazing. And then to win it is even more amazing. So it's hard to give words to these things. Let me put it this way. It was like the pinnacle milestone of recovering from my accident. It was like, I recovered. I'm not a victim of being hit by a drunk driver on my motorcycle when I was 17 years old. Like, I am world champion. Like, I survived. I thrived, and I made it. Like,
that's
I'm
so
bigger
cool
than that accident.
Now, was there the person who hit you, did they stop? Did they apologize? Or they, you know, what was the, was there any interaction after that?
The person that hit me was going so fast, and they weren't paying attention enough to, even after striking me, to even turn their car. They drove it across my lane, across the bike lane, and hit a guardrail.
Oh my God!
And they rolled their SUV down the highway like 200 yards, like ripped the rear axle off their car and blew out all the windows. Like, the car was completely totaled. I'm surprised. I'm amazed that the person that was driving wasn't injured at all, because she probably rolled her car at least six times.
Oh.
She actually, I got to talk to her afterwards. She didn't even realize she hit somebody.
She was that drunk.
Yeah, she just wasn't paying attention at all. She didn't even realize she hit somebody after she crashed. She thought she just crashed her car. So I didn't have any contact with her, thank goodness. After being hit, I was in such bad shape.
Yeah, that's the last thing you needed.
It was insignificant. Survival at that point was what was on my mind.
Now, were your parents there in Sochi to watch?
My father, my wife, my sister, and my uncle got to come to Russia to see me compete. And
wow.
Just getting to share that experience, not just with my family, but my teammates and my coaches. After winning gold, after the American anthem goes up, and with my teammates, they got silver and gold, like Shea and Keith Gable, and having three American flags go up with the American anthem, it was it was an explosive, and it was just, it was one of the strongest emotional moments of my life. But after that, getting to like share my gold medal with my father, and we got to see each other and connect, and it was this recognition of like, wow, there was this time where like my dad was thinking I almost lost my son, or and me
right.
thinking like, wow, there was a time I almost lost my life.
Yes.
And now look at us. It's like world champions. It's like, it was just this moment of solidifying like, wow, what happened didn't get the best of us.
Yeah, you had a second chance and you took it.
And yeah, I've been very blessed.
So the hard part about being an Olympic athlete is, and I've seen this with Rudy over the years, the Olympics comes and then it's 4 years. And those first 2 years afterwards, at least I saw that with Rudy, it was really hard for him to get motivated, just because like, oh, am I going to go for another cycle? And then 2 years out, he'd get excited and start training again. So with you, this is your second Paralympics. What is it, something that you want to continue doing? Because they're going to be adding more sports. They're going to be adding skateboarding and surfing. And I mean, you could be doing this for the next 12 years.
Oh, wow. So first of all, I just am in love with board sports.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be something that I do until I die.
Right.
Or I am forced to stop. I know it's... Well, Evan Strong will always be participating in some type of board sport. If it may not be snowboarding, it might be surfing, it might be skateboarding. But talking about, just sort of reflect back on what you were saying of like 4 year cycles between games.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like when you say 4 years, like, oh yeah, that's not that long. But as an Olympian, Paralympian goes, it's like 4 years is like a lifetime.
It is.
So what I learned now as now going to be a second-time Paralympian is the 2 years after the Games, things really quiet off, especially on the endorsement front, sponsorship front, or your sport, because the focus goes over to the Summer Games, since I'm a winter athlete. After these games, we'll definitely kind of be doing a little bit of redefining myself, and to make a little bit of a lateral movement and focus on different aspects of my career. Definitely keep racing, but we'll definitely be taking a different avenue, because I have some other things in the pipeline, at least of my imagination, that I want to achieve. But I definitely am happy that I stuck it through. I mean, no, just after the Sochi Games, I was so motivated that I wanted to become even better. So I knew that I had to focus on my snowboarding, my athletic ability, to bring it to the next level. And so I really have a platform. I'm well established, so I can make this next step to make lateral movements or redefine myself in my career. So yeah, it's just been a huge learning experience, and it's just more exciting than ever. And there's so many possibilities, and the future for me definitely looks like a really exciting one.
So para snowboard cross, for our listeners, how does it, is it an event you do with other people at the same time? Is it something you do on your own? Is it a judged event? Is it a race? How does it work?
So yeah, first of all, it's an action sport, but the cool thing is it's a race. So it's the excitement of watching slopestyle or super pipe or pig air, but it's a little more relatable because you can see somebody cross a finish line.
Right.
So it's an action sport, high speed, just really fun to watch for somebody that doesn't even know how to, has never snowboarded before or knows anything about snowboarding. It's just a really exciting, high adrenaline sport. But it's based off of motocross or dirt bike racing, where there's a track with features like jumps,
yep,
or rollers or bank turns, and there's a heat of people, like a big group, and they all start at the same time, and who gets to the finish line wins. The cool thing is with this sport, then there's elimination, and it goes from heat to heat to heat, and you keep racing faster and faster people to finals, that then is the podium, first, second, and third. What you would be seeing in snowboard cross is a track down a mountain made out of snow, and 2, 4, or 6 people per heat race to the bottom. But it's normally a minute long, but there's normally around 50 to 60 features within that minute.
Wow, within 1 minute. Oh, my God.
In 1 minute. So we are going top speed and big jumps, passing, drafting, blocking, bumping, just fighting for position, and just a lot of airtime, a bunch of action. It's been one hell of a ride.
That sounds so much fun, because what's cool about it, there's no judges involved, right? Unless you tackle somebody. Basically, it's you against the other guys in the course.
Yeah, and cut and dry, really clean. It's undeniable who the person performed.
Right. What, when you look at that, like when you're talking about the Olympic gold medalist, a medal run, what do you remember about that last heat? And were you the favorite going into that last run, or did you surprise people?
No, I was definitely the favorite to win.
Which is a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah, it's a ton of pressure. And it's the first time ever, so nobody else has done it before. So it's like you're totally blazing a trail. But the thing is I had 2 really strong seasons coming into the games, and I felt confident. And it was just cool to be able to perform and execute on the day when it mattered, for the most important thing in your athletic career. And to make it happen was the mind-blowing, amazing experience.
So you're talking about this time, you actually have 2 events. You have para snowboard cross, and you have danked. What the heck is danked?
Banked. So a bank is an incline of from one elevation to another, a lower elevation. So it's a slalom race, but every turn has a bank in
it. Oh, it's banked, B-A-N.
B-A-N-K-E-D.
Banked, slalom. Cool.
Yeah, banked slalom. You can YouTube it, you can search a hashtag on Instagram, and you can watch videos or see photos. But it's a slalom race, it's a time trial event, so it's different than snowboard cross, where it's heats of people against each other. It's a complementary opposite, where it's a timed event. And it's really fun because every turn is like a skateboard
bowl or a pocket where you can just basically pump a left and a right pocket down the mountain, and it's just a lot of fun, and it's top high speed and just a lot of technicality to it, so it's really fun to watch, but it's even more fun to race. And it's just, yeah, just in the snowboard community, it's just kind of like the fun-loving activity of gathering competition for snowboarders.
So when you look back at this journey, and like we mentioned earlier, we first met and you were still on crutches, and it wasn't that long after your accident, and now everything you've accomplished. How important has CAF been in this journey?
Oh, man, CAF, the Challenge Athlete Foundation, like, showed me the vision. they were the people that exposed me to what was possible, gave me permission to not be a victim of a disability. And then on top of that, financial support to get my first prosthetic leg that got me on my feet. Because of Challenge Athlete Foundation, it really fueled me and then shot me off in a direction where I'm now a professional athlete, where my full-time occupation has been for the last 5 years. It's been athletics, and I've gone to travel the world and become the world champion. And Challenge an endless well of gratitude to that nonprofit, because not just knowing how much my life has been changed by that foundation, but the cool thing is being a part of a community of so many other people that have a disability are professional athletes also. And it's like we're a part of this family that's grown so much in the world of I call it adaptive sports or disabled athletics.
Right.
And for a lot of ways, how I think about it, it's like the backbone of so much of what I get to benefit from, you know? So, thank you.
And you've been, I think you might have been on our first $1 million challenge bike ride, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure if it was the first million-dollar challenge, but...
It was early. It was definitely early.
I got to... You guys, Challenge Athletes Foundation, brought me from Hawaii to La Jolla to watch the Tri Challenge. And that was still before I was fitted for a prosthetic and I was still on crutches.
Yep, I remember that.
Challenge Athletes Foundation just wanted me to see the event.
Right.
And I was so inspired. I'm all like, and I think I told you, Bob.
Yep.
I'm like, next year I'm going to come and I'm going to do the bike leg.
Right.
I'm going to do the 56 miles. And I did. And I came out and I think I did it in sub 3 hours. I was so motivated. I didn't want to be disabled or just be laid out anymore, you know?
Right.
So I got to then, participate in that for a handful of years. And one of the years got to do the $1 million challenge from San Francisco. Unfortunately, there was fires that year.
Oh, that's right.
Made it to Santa Barbara. Doing that 136-mile bike ride from...
Big Sur.
San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
That through Big Sur. It's amazing, but wow, I think I was like 9 or 10 hours in the saddle.
Right.
with a headwind out of Big Sur. Yeah, so... Yeah, I remember. Those were fun times.
So do you see, like we're talking about every 4 years, the Winter Games, and now with skateboarding and with surfing probably going in for, I think skateboarding's for 2020, and we're hoping adaptive surfing is for 2024. Do you see yourself maybe doing both, doing winter and summer?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to be able to say that I'm a winter and summer Paralympian. And, I love snowboarding, but really where my roots lie are in skateboarding and surfing. So
right.
If I've been able to be a part of the a movement in adaptive skateboarding and snowboarding for a handful of years now, was a part of the first ever adapter of World Championships of Surfing in
La Jolla.
In La Jolla. So much has happened there. I love it there. And especially with Alana Nichols, the only Paralympian to win gold in summer and winter, Alpine skiing and wheelchair basketball. And we want to see the movement grow. So we came out, competed, represented, and it was a great turnout. We had so many spectators on the beach. It was like it blew one of my big snowboard cross races like out of the water by how much focus and energy and just people coming out and enjoying the show.
Right.
I just see big things for adaptive surfing, and it's going to revamp a lot of ways for the Summer Paralympics because it's just so exciting. Surfing is just so much fun.
How important is it to you? Like you said, Rudy was there for you at the beginning and so many other folks when you came out for San Diego Triathlon Challenge. How important is it to you to be that guy giving back to help that next person who loses a leg or is paralyzed?
Well, that's been one of the most healing parts of my journey is I was that kid with a fresh injury learning what it's like to live a life without a limb and having people like Rudy and foundations like Challenge Athletes Foundation and Amy Purdy and Daniel Gale with their nonprofit Challenge Athletes Foundation, Adaptive Action Sports, it just gave me a path. It gave me a vision, gave me possibilities, and because of those people in those organizations have completely saved my life.
And I'm sure that you're that guy when you hear about somebody else who is newly injured, you're the guy there wanting to make sure they get the support they need.
Yeah, so having those organizations help me heal so much, I've been able to come out for camps and clinics for surfing, skateboarding, snowboarding, and then just the new athletes that I meet at the San Diego Triathlon Challenge and just tell them that, it's life is possible again. And that's, been just a huge healing part in my journey.
Love it. Hey, Evan, first of all, congrats on everything that you've accomplished. I'm excited to be watching you in a week or so when you head over to South Korea for your second Paralympic experience and have two events you'll be participating in. Thanks so much for being such a great part of our CAF family.
Oh, thank you, Bob. And make sure to stay tuned. NBC, March 12th is Snowboard Cross, and March 16th is Bank Slalom. And it's going to be one hell of a show, and I hope you tune in because it's going to be a lot of action.
Love it. Can't wait to watch, man. I love Paris Snowboard Cross. That sounds like a blast.
It's a thrill for sure.
Love it. Evan Strong has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, toughmantri.com, by VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, Polar.com, Chase Your Destiny, Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series, Swim Run USA, Epic Races and Epic Places, USA-SwimRun.com. Really cool concept is the swim runs that are jumping up all over the country. Challenge Athletes Foundation, they've helped Evan Strong, and 2,448 grants went out last year, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Thanks, Evan. And again, we're brought to you by Babbittville.com, and you can check us out on iTunes. As always, endurance lives here.